I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, SCOTUS is hearing a case about vote by mail that could dramatically change how Washington State's elections work. Plus, are regular citizens finally getting wise to Washington's climate grift? And happy Trans Day of Awareness in the city of Bothell. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. As you know, one of the many points of disagreement I have with so many of you is I like vote by mail. I'm lazy. I'm one lazy SOB when it comes to exercising my rights in our wonderful democratic republic. But I also understand that there are some challenges with it. And I certainly understand that there are some things that could be done to improve it. Now, what is one of the most frustrating parts of our vote by mail system? Because the convenience aspect of it is obviously one of the best parts of it. One of the worst parts of it is you can wait days and days and days and days to find out who the winner of an election is. And you can have somebody who 5 days after the election you think is the winner, and then they turn out not to be the winner. And then the other person comes from behind on like the 11th day. And so it's very frustrating, and I understand that. And there is a case that SCOTUS is hearing right now that could change all of that. And that would say, hey, you cannot count ballots that are received after Election Day. This is from Fox News. SCOTUS conservatives signal readiness on curbing late arriving mail ballots. A ruling from the High Court is expected by June. So it said justices heard roughly 2 hours of oral arguments in the case Watson v. Republican National Committee. It centers around a 2024 lawsuit brought against Mississippi's state law that allows for counting mail-in ballots received up to 5 days after the election, so long as they're postmarked by or before Election Day. So very similar to Washington State, we count ballots long after 5 days, however, but as long as they were postmarked or dropped into a ballot drop box on or before Election Day. It says Mississippi is one of 14 states, as well as the District of Columbia and three U.S. territories that currently allow for the counting of late-arriving mail-in ballots, so long as the ballots are postmarked by or before Election Day. So directly relevant to the way that our elections work here in Washington State. And I'll tell you, I share this concern. I share this frustration. As much as I like vote by mail, because I'm not a criminal and I'm a legal citizen who can legally vote here, I am very frustrated by, we've had in Seattle, remember when the socialist Shama Sawant was down by like 12 percentage points? And then the week after the election, all of a sudden she comes back and wins the thing. And of course, you guys always talk about the Rossi-Gregoire gubernatorial race, how like he was the governor until he wasn't. And so it is a very frustrating thing. And one of the things that I believe in Washington it has served to do is sow distrust in the system, where it's like, oh, they came from behind on the sixth day. On the seventh day, and it's just really frustrating. And that seems to be one of the things that these conservative justices are zeroing in on, is they believe that this hurts trust in the election system. So it says justices on the High Court appeared largely sympathetic to the arguments made by the Trump administration's lawyer, who noted that the Mississippi law and other late arriving mail-in ballots laws in other states could erode voter confidence in election results. Justice Samuel Alito pointed to concerns that, quote, confidence in election outcomes can be seriously undermined when results are delayed, which was later echoed by Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who said if the apparent winner the morning after the election ends up losing due to late arriving ballots, charges of a rigged election could explode. So in Washington State, what would this mean? As with the other states and territories in the District of Columbia, it would mean that the U.S. Postal Service would have to have your ballot on the day of the election. And it means that obviously by 8 p.m. on Election Day, it would have to be in the ballot drop box. But that's always been the case. So that would become a very risky thing to send your ballot in via USPS too late. But it's not like the state couldn't do that. You just change the rule. Yeah, well, you're going to have to send your ballot in earlier, or you're going to have to put it in a ballot drop box. Because if we don't have it by the end of the day on Election Day, then it doesn't matter anymore. But of course, you're going to hear so much hand wringing over this. Oh my gosh, and Democrats, and late counting in this state has often skewed to the left. That's one of the reasons that Shama Sawant, the socialist, was so good at coming from behind. is her voters were voting late, and probably because they were rounding up enough homeless people to get her over the edge at the last minute. But you're going to hear all sorts of fear-mongering and hand-wringing over what I think is a very legitimate concern. Case in point, the Seattle Times. So the Seattle Times yesterday had this headline: vote by mail in Washington at risk in U.S. Supreme Court case. No, it's not. It's not at risk. You can still vote by mail. You just can't, like, put your ballot in the mail and they can't count it 7 days later. And so they actually ended up changing that headline to say how this U.S. Supreme Court case affects Washington's vote by mail. But that's the kind of fear-mongering. Oh my gosh, vote by mail is in risk. And people here love vote by mail. I think by and large, and Democrats certainly love it. And so that's about scaring people. Oh, the conservative justices on the Supreme Court are going to take away your right to vote by mail. And that's not what's happening here. So I asked you guys, you know, what do you think about this? Because it certainly would change for some of us, you know, how we, when we cast our ballot. I prefer to cast my ballot like as soon as I get it, because let's be honest, I already know who I'm voting for. I already know. So I get it in the mail pretty early, so I don't know that this would impact me very much. But it says, so the poll I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals and X, should mail-in ballots count if received after Election Day? Real quick, Nicole, yes or no?
I'm going to say no. I want to get this stuff done. It takes too long to count these votes, to deal with this. Like, if that's going to be, if you're going to mail it in, then you better have it in ahead of time.
Yeah, and give them a deadline. But that is the danger of working with USPS. I'm not sure that's the most reliable entity to be able to go, because we've had some instances where ballots have been left in a mailbox, right, that wasn't even being checked. And so it's one of the concerns of vote by mail. 88% of you say no, it should not count if it's received after Election Day. Chuck says we shouldn't allow mail-in ballots except for deployed military members. A lot of you just don't support mail-in voting. Megan says we should be able to know on election night who the winner is of the contest. Washington State has taken advantage of the postmark date and magically the Democrats win. It's not okay that they know how many ballots they need to maintain power. And that's sowing distrust in the system, where one day one person seems thoroughly ahead, I mean by double digits in the case of Shama Sawant, and then all of a sudden a few days go by and she comes back and she wins. Now maybe you narrow the window, like, hey, you can accept ballots, you can count ballots that were postmarked by the day of for 48 hours or for 2 days, but not like 10. That's absolutely insane. Yeah, that's what Chris said. Only if it's within maybe 2 days or 3 days of the election. But I almost think you cut PS out of it entirely, and just you can only bring it to a ballot drop box, although that might hurt people in rural areas where there's fewer ballot drop boxes. So I'm not so sure that's the best option either. Chris said they should only count for military and overseas. If you're in the state, you can control it unless there's like a natural disaster happening. So yeah, you have like 3 weeks to vote. In our state, you have like 3 weeks to vote. And so if you wait to the very last minute, it doesn't count. I kind of think that's your fault. You have an abundance of time in our state to be able to vote and have your ballot count. So in June, we're expecting that ruling from SCOTUS. It could impact the November elections, which could be pretty profound. I mean, that's for 14 states. That's a big deal. And so they'd have to figure out how exactly are we going to work that so ballots get in on time. Look, I want everybody to be able to vote who's legally allowed to vote. But again, we're not asking a lot here. We're just asking that on the night of the election, or maybe the morning after, we know who won. We know who won. And we don't wait a week to find out, because this last past election was absolutely insane. All right. Speaking of things that are absolutely insane, I'm going to lose my damn mind over this gas price thing. I am going to literally have to be sent to an insane asylum. Western state, here I come. Because if I have to listen to one more Democrat complain about the gas prices right now, like literally just send me to Western state. And again, I feel the need, so it doesn't come off as me being a hypocrite. Yes, the war in Iran is increasing gas prices. Yes, that's what's happening right now. But I don't want to hear Democrats who have not complained once about all the other factors that have increased our gas prices exponentially over the last 3 years. I don't want to hear a word from them about the cost of gas right now. It is so utterly disingenuous. I think there was a memo sent out to all the Democratic members of Congress saying, oh, take pictures of high gas prices in your district and post them and blame the Republicans, because that's what they're doing. Senator Patty Murray, Trump promised no new wars and lower prices, and Americans are seeing the exact opposite. No war with Iran, lower prices. Rep. Adam Smith is the one that angered me the most, because I know he's smart, I know he's smart. He says constituents from across the 9th district have been sharing how high gas prices have become since Trump began his war of choice with Iran. Here's what one resident paid in Kent. He had attached a picture of a gas pump. Trump's decisions are raising costs. And I said to him, look, I'll let this slide. If you can show me one example of a time that you spoke out about the costs associated with the Climate Commitment Act at the pump in 3 years. I said the same thing to Pramila Jayapal, who said Trump's illegal war is making life more expensive and shares the Seattle Times article about gas prices. If you, any of you, Del Bene, Jayapal, Murray, Adam Smith, you show me one time in 3 years where you criticized the fact that Washington State's policies add $1.47 in taxes and fees onto every single gallon of gas, and you can complain about Iran as much as you want. I'll retweet you. It'll be fine because at least we know that you'll have moral consistency. But why don't they do this? And why do they get away with it? Well, because the media does the exact same thing. The media doesn't hold them accountable for that. The media is not writing stories. I mean, we've talked about this now ever since the first strike in Iran. The media was first fear-mongering and saying, oh, Trump's at it in Iran. This is going to impact oil prices, which isn't untrue. And then they ticked up 2 cents. And King 5 was like, gas prices increased 2 cents because of Iran. And they weren't saying check when gas prices went up nearly 50 cents per gallon overnight when the Climate Commitment Act took effect. So they've continued it this whole time. This is from My Northwest. Washington gas prices hit second highest in nation at 5+ per gallon, nearly 40% above the national average. Nothing in the entire story about the reason why we're 40% above the national average. It's not because we have a straight pipeline from Iran right here, and what happens in Iran hurts our gas prices more than anyone else. No, we were already 40% above the national average. It's going up everywhere because of Iran. But it's so high here because of the taxes and fees. It's so high here because of the Climate Commitment Act. It's so high here because the gas tax just went up 6 cents a gallon. So please, can somebody show me one morally consistent person? Because I think you could give some examples on the right as well, where they've complained an awful lot about gas prices, rightfully so, in Washington State, because of the taxes and the worthless climate policies, but are awfully quiet when it comes to the gas price impacts right now that the war in Iran is having. And it's okay if you want to justify it and say, hey, we have to do this. Like I gave the example of J.D. Vance. I think he's been very intellectually honest on this issue. Yeah, guys, we're really sorry. Gas prices are going to suck for a while, and we're going to get those down as fast as we can, but we've got to take care of business in Iran. Fine. At least that's intellectual honesty. And there is just almost none of it in politics these days. And so, yeah, I just can't. It's driving me nuts. I feel like I'm going to block every single person who complains about Iran and gas prices on X, but has never complained about everything else that has increased gas prices in Washington State. And meanwhile, for what? For what? The dollar, what is it, $1.47? Yeah, $1.47 per gallon that you put in your pump in Washington State is taxes, okay? And you might think, well, that's fine. You know, we've got just a tremendous road system. That's fine, Brandy. We have a tremendous road system, and that's what our gas taxes are going to pay for. And the Climate Commitment Act, oh, it's going to give all these alternative transportation methods that are going to help reduce congestion on the roadways and all these things. Yeah, no, it's not. You're paying all that money for virtually nothing. You're paying all that money for Washington State to have one of the worst highway systems in the nation, according to Reason Foundation's annual highway report. This is the 29th year they've put this out. The study looks at every state's roads and bridges. They look at 13 categories, including traffic fatalities, pavement condition, congestion, deficient bridges, and spending. And they rank them all. Where do you think we are in the ranking? 48th in terms of the health of our highway system. And just so we're clear, number one would be the best, okay? 50 would be the worst. We are 48th. And you look at some of the areas, it says Alaska, California, Washington, New York, and Louisiana have the worst performing and least cost-effective highway systems in the nation, the study finds. Alaska ranked last overall for the second consecutive year, posting the worst rural fatality rate in the nation. California ranked 49th, with the worst urban arterial pavement condition, and Washington finished 48th overall, while ranking as the highest spending state in multiple categories. So 48th worst overall, but we spend the most. Doesn't that, what have I always said about our state, or the Democrats in our state, they see money as the indicator of success. They really do believe if we're spending more money on this, we're going to get better outcomes. And name one area where that's true. One. Clearly, it's not in the health of our infrastructure. We're 48th. And yet, we're spending some of the highest amounts in the nation on a crappy system. God, that sounds familiar. Homelessness. We have some of the highest rates of homelessness in the nation, yet we have some of the highest spending to combat homelessness in the nation. What's another area where this sounds familiar? Education. We spend $20,000 per pupil, one of the highest rates per pupil in the nation, only to have our test scores and our performance plummeting, and Mississippi's like through the roof, and they spend like a fraction of that. So some of the areas on that highway report, again, 48th worst overall, high for administrative disbursements, 50th for capital and bridge disbursements. We spend more than any other state on infrastructure, capital, and bridges, yet we have bridges. How many freaking press conferences has Ferguson had to do on bridges that are just falling apart? Mm-hmm. Yet we spend more than any state in the nation? Maintenance disbursements. We spend more than any state in the nation on maintenance disbursements. Yet what the hell is going on? Absolutely insane. So you can be there at the gas pump, pumping up, and you can be cursing Trump over Iran. Fine. But also know that $1.47 is going right to state government to piss it away. Only for us to have one of the worst highway systems in the nation. This is a quote from one of the researchers, the lead author on the study, senior managing director at Reason Foundation. He told the Center Square of Washington State, "You're just sort of entering into a maintenance death spiral," he said. Great. At a certain point in time, leadership, political leadership, I think, is going to have to change the way they're operating. Yeah. Good luck with that. He says the state is diverting money that could be spent on maintenance to projects related to ferry and vehicle electrification, removing fish passage barriers, and other climate-related initiatives. The Climate Commitment Act, the state's cap and trade program, has significantly increased the cost of living and generates money for those projects. However, Democrats have barred that funding from supporting routine highway and bridge work, reserving it for projects that reduce carbon emissions and projects that don't do anything to reduce carbon emissions. So in this state, while our highway system just goes to hell, we're spending money on electrifying ferries and vehicles, removing fish passage barriers, and other climate-related initiatives, which we'll talk more about those later on in the show. And that's why we have some of the highest gas prices in the nation. It's not because of Iran, the fact that we're 40% higher. And so I don't know what other like data to show you to help people understand that. But the Democrats will keep saying it. The media will keep propping that narrative up. And I guess the rest of us will live in the land of common sense. All right, coming up next, speaking of climate policy, I wonder if this is the thing that is going to get regular citizens to wake up to the climate grift. We'll discuss. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing. We still have a few days left in March, and they're running their awesome promo where if you get a new roof with Valentine, you get one full year of roof maintenance for free, which is awesome. So, you know, you might have a lot of other things that you need done outside that they can help you with. We'll talk about some of those services they offer in a minute. But I really think if you know that your roof is nearing the end of its lifespan, now is a great time to take advantage of this promo from our friends at Firstmark. So get a roof with them, free year of roof maintenance, which is great. And then after that, have Firstmark or have Valentine Roofing help you tick off your to-do list. For instance, they can do exterior cleaning, they can do gutter cleaning, gutter replacement, all of those things. So reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. Tell them you want to take advantage before the end of the month on that deal to get a free year of roof maintenance with a new roof. And then talk to them about some of the other services that they offer. 206 Roofing to schedule your free estimate. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz. All right. There is a controversy afoot in the Snoqualmie Valley. There is a proposed battery energy storage project that very rightfully has citizens there all riled up and I think might even be the turning point for them to get wise to the state's climate grift. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. Okay, so there is a massive, what's called a BESS, so battery energy storage system, that's slated to go in the city of Snoqualmie. It's in King County, technically. So this is a King County project that really the city of Snoqualmie, you know, is kind of being stuck with. And what's crazy about this, so these are these massive units, and they have all these lithium ion batteries and they store energy, right? And so, you know, these, and I think what's so significant about the project in Snoqualmie is typically these things end up in the middle of nowhere. And there's a reason for that. It's because they can be incredibly dangerous. If one of those things catches fire, I mean, that is a climate catastrophe. That is an absolute climate catastrophe. It'll send toxic gases into the air. It'll pollute the waterways. And also, I'm sorry, this is one of the most beautiful areas of the state. There are rivers galore right where they're planning to put this thing. There is so much wildlife, the beautiful outdoors, and you want to plop this behemoth of a BESS right between I-90 and Snoqualmie proper, close to schools, close to parks, close to homes. And it takes one incident, one fire for people to have to flee for their lives and for the water and the air to be tainted for God knows how long. So there's nothing good about this going in Snoqualmie or going in anyone's backyard for that matter. So the community has been absolutely up in arms trying to fight back against this thing. And to the city of Snoqualmie's credit, this is King County property. And so they are limited in the way they can respond to this. But last night, there was a meeting at Snoqualmie City Hall, and it was packed. And I stopped by for about an hour and a half. Look at me going to a city council meeting. I took some pictures while I was there. Absolutely packed. The whole room was filled. And then you had people standing outside the room and up the stairs waiting for an opportunity to be able to testify. And just a couple things about this meeting before I get into some comments about the meeting that the people who were at the meeting might not like. I've got some tough love for them today. But I mean, they were all so informed of the issue. They were incredibly respectful, like it didn't get out of control at all. Very organized. And I have to give credit to the Snoqualmie City Council as well. They cleared the whole calendar for the night to be able to hear from everyone. They gave citizens 3 minutes each to speak, which if you've ever been to a public meeting, that's a ton. In the legislature, they're like, you have 30 seconds. They'll cut your mic off. So very, very, and I don't want to say generous because that is the job of the city council, but the city council wanted to hear from everyone, cleared their schedule, and literally just went around the room and let people come up until they tuckered themselves out. And so I thought it was one of the best community meetings I've been to in terms of an informed and motivated populace and citizenry and elected officials doing what elected officials are supposed to do. Listen, hear, take the feedback, go out, do something with it. So I want to say that off the bat. I was super impressed when I was there. Now, here's the criticism. I can't tell necessarily on site what someone's politics are, okay? That would be a little judgmental, a little reading a book by its cover. But, you know, I feel like I can get a pretty good gist of a room. This is my job, after all. I cover politics for a living. And I also know that this is a city in an area of the state that is getting increasingly blue. Votes for Democrats. Their elected leaders are mostly Democrats. So I'm sitting in that room and I'm listening to this really impassioned, informed populace that is trying to keep this potential disaster out of their community. And I'm thinking, did they vote for the people who are doing this to them? And do they know that they probably voted for the people in the policies that are doing this to them? Because by the time that you're in that room trying to keep this battery storage facility out of your community, you're almost too late in getting involved. I mean, never too late. I want people to get involved and to be informed in all of those things. But the time to start pushing back against this was when Governor Jay Inslee was in office and was pushing all these insane climate goals and climate policies that common sense people were saying at the time, oh my gosh, this is going to be disastrous. You know, specifically in 2019, there was a law passed by Governor Inslee and the Democrats in Olympia that directly led to the situation that the citizens in Snoqualmie are dealing with right now. Is called the Clean Energy Transformation Act, Senate Bill 5116. And it committed Washington State to an electricity supply free of greenhouse gas emissions by 2045, which we've talked a ton about this, but basically that goal is impossible. It's not going to happen. you'd have to dedicate a third of the landmass in Washington state to wind and solar, and then have some offshore wind farms and all of that. So Governor Inslee, because he wants to be the climate governor, he's getting ready at that point to run for president. He wants to be the climate presidential candidate. He just picks a number, picks a goal, sets a date sometime in the future when he won't be in office anymore, and says, we're going to try to reach that. And so all of the policies that they are trying to undertake to reach a goal that is not achievable start to play out. And these battery energy storage systems going into a community near you are a direct result of CETA, the Clean Energy Transformation Act. And this was what was going to happen. We've got to try to reach this impossible goal. And so we've got to try to push all these clean energy. And then you get these battery systems in there and all of these things without having the time to properly consider better alternatives and the consequences of doing so. And so I'm not going to speak for everyone in that room. I didn't know most of them. I'm not going to say for sure who they voted for. But given the area of the state, the political makeup of that city, I'm going to guess a hell of a lot of them voted for Jay Inslee. And probably even liked some of his climate policies. And I'm going to guess a hell of a lot of them sent their Democratic representatives down to Olympia who supported these policies. There are consequences to a climate agenda being pushed at any cost and for any reason. There are consequences to climate policies and supporting climate policies that sound nice, but are actually very harmful and do virtually nothing. Some other examples of this. I mean, Washington state voters had a chance to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. And, you know, I don't know if they just decided it sounded nice or whatever it is, or didn't understand the consequences of it. The Climate Commitment Act is what created the carbon auctions. And that's what immediately increased the cost of fuel. So I go back to, you know, the people in that room. I'm sure some of them are really upset at the cost of fuel right now. And I'm sure some of them are buying into that narrative that it's all about Iran. And don't know that the Climate Commitment Act, which some of them failed to repeal when it was on the ballot, passed by a governor that some of them voted for, is really the culprit for why our gas prices are so high. And look, I will never fault anyone for caring about the environment. I'll never fault anyone. But some of this stuff that these environmental policies, they're meaningless. If you care about the environment, they're meaningless. For instance, the HEAL grants that came out of the Climate Commitment Act. They're giving millions of dollars. I mean, they convinced you that this act was necessary to literally save our planet, right? And that's why you have to pay all this money and all this. They're giving millions of dollars in these grants to help fund communities most impacted by environmental hazards. And they list LGBTQ plus people. So it says they want to, this goes to environmental justice. This grant program focuses on building climate resilience and enhancing community-led decision-making to advance environmental justice. What the hell kind of, what does that even mean? Look, you guys, look at me. What does that even mean? What kind of environmental justice does the LGBTQ plus community need? And we're spending millions on it. So I feel like you have these regular people who, and when I say regular, what I mean by that is not politics obsessed. And I'm so jealous of that. But like they're living their lives, they're doing their thing until the policy impacts them directly. And this does impact them directly. One of these battery energy storage systems going into their backyard could potentially kill their kids if it lights on fire and explodes, could poison their water, could poison their air. The fact that that is even affiliated with the phrase clean energy is insane. How can something be called green energy or clean energy if one fire could poison the environment? How can you even call that clean energy and green energy? So now you have these people, hundreds, if not thousands of people who are up in arms over this, who are terrified. And I got that sense. They're terrified for their community and they have a reason to be. But I also, it's one of these instances of you don't, until the policy impacts you, you don't care. And I mean, there are some people, we've been screaming to high heaven for years and years and years about the fact that these climate policies and setting these artificial deadlines and timelines are going to lead to bad policies, are going to lead to bad outcomes. And that's what communities like Snoqualmie are dealing with right now. I mean, the bad outcomes of the CCA were totally predictable. Yet people look the other way until it impacts them directly. And I'm fine, for the record. I am so happy all those people. That gave me the warm fuzzies deep down in my heart, in my cold, cold, dead heart, to see all of those people so well-informed, showing up on a weekday night to advocate for themselves and their neighbors and their families. We need that every single day of the week. I love that so much. I just want them to also understand and acknowledge, especially the voters who vote for people who are pushing these climate policies, that this trajectory started a long time ago. And it's not anti-environment, it's not anti-clean energy to question it. It's not anti-clean energy to question what environmental justice means. It's not anti-clean energy to question why the CCA is giving millions of dollars in grants to help LGBTQ people fight environmental justice and urban natives fight environmental justice issues. It's not anti-green energy to question these battery energy storage systems, as they know, and they're doing it. And we talked about this on Sundays with Subscribers this week at length, because we get so many emails on this issue. People are so fired up about it, and they absolutely have a right to be. We spoke with a man named James DeLay. He's basically become a self-styled expert in these BESS systems. And he talked about his real fear, and the predominant concern about them is the risk for them to catch fire.
This is common across BESS facilities, and they talk about all the safety devices and everything they're going to have in there, and the notifications and alerts and alarms and sensors and all this stuff. A lot of the best fires that happen, all the systems fail. So the Surprise, Arizona fire, basically what happened was it started burning, and technically it didn't burn. It just off gas. It started releasing gases. Some guy that lived about a quarter mile away was at home. He's like, "What's that smell? I smell in my Arizona home that's air conditioned. All the windows are closed." And he looks out, and about a quarter mile away, he sees some smoke or whatever off in the desert. So he calls 911 and says, "Hey, I think there's a desert fire." So the fire truck decides to drive out there, and they basically say, "This is not a desert fire." And that what they saw when they arrived was basically a 2 to 3 foot deep, just floating river of gases and smoke. Wow. And they're only 2 to 3 feet off the ground. And they didn't have the right equipment. So they're like, "Okay, we're not going to do anything. We're going to call hazmat." Mm-hmm. Hazmat truck arrived. They get their special meters out, and it can't detect everything that comes from a lithium battery fire. But one of the things it did detect was hydrogen cyanide. And their meters go up to, I forget what it is, but like 50 parts per meter, which is basically immediate threat to life for them. And they're like, "Okay, well, it just pegged instantly. Anywhere that they walked around on the perimeter," and we're talking probably the size of a football field around this single best container unit, but they walked out around the whole entire perimeter, and it was at that level for everything. And it was just blowing off into the desert. So they literally waited 4 hours, roughly, until the wind had blown it and decreased the toxicity level to an acceptable level for them to go into wearing hazmat suits.
And that's what they want to drop into one of the most beautiful communities in the state of Washington. One of the most scenic communities in the state of Washington. And that's what's being pushed as clean energy and green energy. And again, there's a use for these, but in most places where they're put, they are so far from any community that could be hurt by them if the unthinkable happens. And it's not just the unthinkable. There's a lot of concerns about it. I mean, wildlife concerns. And that's what I heard a lot at the meeting last night, is people saying, "Look, like, I love the wildlife that comes in and out of my yard, and you're going to drop this big, noisy thing." The noise that they emit on a regular basis. For instance, on Sunday, we talked to Zach and Kathleen. They bought this property on Lake Sammamish in Skagit County that they want to build their dream home on, except one of these best things went right across their property line, was installed unbeknownst to them. This is what it sounds like. On Sammamish Island. Absolutely insane. Sorry, I said Lake Sammamish. Sammamish Island. Just loud, carries across their entire property, and then when it needs servicing, it goes beep, 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 and it won't stop beeping until someone comes and services it on the island. It's insane. So we talked to them on Sunday's show.
it kind of was an annoyance around our driveway area. Mm-hmm. But then we cleared land to be able to build, and then it just carried over. You know, we have a 4-acre property, and if you're on the other corner, you can still hear it click on and off.
Yeah, and it also, Kathleen, beeps.
Yeah, the beeping is when it has some kind of a malfunction issue with it. And the problem is, you know, they'll get notified, but it beeps until someone actually, you know, days later will come out and decide to come check on it. It's not a high priority because it's just a small, you know, 3-house and the fire department battery station.
Yeah, now they don't even know if they want to build their dream house there. Because they're like, why would I want to listen to that all day long? And they have reached out to the proper people to express this concern, and they've gotten virtually no help. You know, PSC said, oh, we'll come in and we'll put a hood on it and, you know, try to, didn't do much. Skagit County Commissioner's Office, they've reached out. We reached out to the commissioner, got a statement back saying, we feel it's reasonable to allow PSC to explore less expensive options for compliance. If those measures fail, then clearly PSC will need to take other steps, such as replacing this unit with a more sound efficient one. PSC tells us PSC is actively working to reduce the noise at the source by upgrading the HVAC unit to a quieter version. This has taken longer than anticipated due to unforeseen delays, but it is a priority to resolve. So let's see how loud it is once they replace it with a quieter version. But just so you know, in case you don't already, the places where these planned best sites are, Snoqualmie Ridge, as I said, Covington and Maple Valley, Cedro Woolley, Bucota near Tenino, Enumclaw Glacier, and Benton County. Come into a community near you. And it's not just Snoqualmie and the fact that Snoqualmie is now so densely populated. It's this beautiful place, all of these things. These shouldn't go near anyone's home. They shouldn't go near any community. And again, I just ask, I'm not trying to be condescending. I'm not trying to say, you got to vote for Trump Republicans or these things are going to come into your community. I'm just saying, if these sorts of things matter to you, look into the background of how they came to be. And adjust who you vote for and what policies you support accordingly. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. There's a lot of stuff to get involved in, and I think this is a really good example of citizens getting involved. And if you want to watch our full Sundays with Subscribers episode about these best units, you can go become a subscriber, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. It's $5 a month. We do in-depth interviews on interesting topics every single Sunday. Who knew we'd be our email has been off the hook about these things for like a year. And we finally like, we got to do something about this. Or I think people might start to physically injure me if we don't do a story about these things very fast. It's been an interesting learning experience. And I was glad to be in Snoqualmie and hear a little bit about what citizens had to say about it. All right. Our friends at First Mark Insurance, they are the ones you want to call to talk through your insurance needs. And I think a lot of people reevaluate their insurance when they need to save some money. And it sucks getting one of those notices saying, hey, your insurance rates are going up, XYZ. That is a great time to call First Mark. And not just for your personal insurance needs. I mean, Mike and I love First Mark. We use them for our personal family needs, but I also use them here on Undivided. And one of the great things about it is they're a local business too. So they know how local businesses are just nickel and dime to death by the government and all the costs that we have to pay. And so at First Mark, they're keenly aware of that. And our friend Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, says they want to help businesses save money any way they can.
We're seeing the impact of just increased cost on businesses, mm-hmm. like their increased cost for their, you know, their workers' comp, the L&I stuff, all the stuff they have to go through to maintain their business.
Yeah.
And then insurance, it just is one of those items that's increasing right along with it. The property values, you know, and rates for property insurance are going up. So, yeah, so it's tough on business owners for sure.
Yeah, and so you don't want to navigate it alone, and First Mark can help you with that. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com, take the First Mark challenge today, whether it's for your business or your home, and like so many of our viewers and listeners, Connie, Debbie, Carol, Robin, so many more, I've saved a lot of money going through the First Mark challenge, hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year, firstmarkinsurance.com. All right, the city of Bothell has declared a transgender day of visibility. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right. right. The city of Bothell, if you're not familiar, it's like northeast of Seattle, pretty close to Seattle. They put out on their social media, thanks so much to our amazing community partners who accepted the Transgender Day of Visibility and Washington's first teen-led mental health summit proclamations. In their remarks, they shared the importance of finding support in community and feeling heard and seen as your authentic self. Thank you for helping build Bothell's beloved community. Like, if there's one population of people right now that does not need a day of visibility, I'm sorry, it's the transgender community. In Washington, every day is their day of visibility, and I suggested maybe a taxpayer day of visibility would be nice. But this story went crazy across the country, and I think a lot of it had to do with what this council member was wearing in the photo on their official page, Amanda Dodd. Her shirt says, "Immigrants are not criminals, but the president is." I just can't. This is what we're dealing with here. This is what we're dealing with in trying to save our state. Oh my gosh, it really is something else. So the mayor of Bothell, Mason Thompson, was not happy that people were making fun of their trans day of visibility. How dare you? How dare you? He posted a long, do I have to read this whole thing, Nicole? He posted this long post. He said, "Hi there, Mayor of Bothell here. I see this post has attracted a lot of folks, mostly from somewhere else, who seem upset that in Bothell we acknowledge the inherent dignity and humanity of our neighbors. Personally, I've never felt that what other people have in their pants is any of my business, but I can see that there are some of you who feel it is your business, which is pretty weird." That's literally line for line what they were shouting at signature gathering. Why do you care what's in my pants, weirdo?
You've literally just gave them a day based right. on what's in their pants.
Yeah, you said you don't care what's in their pants, but you gave them a day of visibility. And the other thing about that, when he says, we acknowledge the inherent dignity and humanity of our neighbors. Okay, so how does singling out a group of people suggest that you care about everyone's dignity and humanity? Because then you're singling out this specific group. It reminds me of the people who have the, "In this house, no human is illegal. Mm-hmm. No human is illegal on stolen land. Disabled people have all this." And it's like, okay, if you didn't have that sign up, I would assume that you just, like, businesses that have that. If you didn't have that sign up, I would just go into your business and assume that you treat everyone with dignity and everyone the same and you don't discriminate. Because, like, we in this business, we don't discriminate against black people and gay people and disabled people. And it's like, why do you feel the need to tell me that? Mm-hmm. I feel like you telling me that means you either do, or if I'm not one of those things, you're going to discriminate against me. So this is like what this virtue signaling, it almost makes you seem more narrow-minded. He goes on to say, "The preamble of our county vision says we care for each other, we respect each other, and we work together to ensure everyone feels safe and welcome. While this may upset some, this is who we are and will continue to be in Bothell." No, you're saying that you respect some more than others. You respect some groups more than others because they get an entire day in your city. And that is the problem. And I love that how condescending and talking down to, oh, these comments are people from people who aren't from here. So you can't have an opinion on it, right? He said, "As long as there are people who are openly upset that some of our neighbors exist, part of our job is to make sure everyone feels safe and is welcome and is to publicly celebrate the communities who are targeted. Those of you who are upset at this proclamation are the reason it's necessary. I wish so much that it were not. I long for a world," he says this, "I long for a world in which everyone simply loved their neighbors as themselves, regardless of race, religion, or gender identity." Yeah, that's the point. Like, how about we just love everyone in the community and celebrate everyone in the community and don't single out specific groups to celebrate more than others? What you're doing is literally the opposite of what you say you're trying to achieve. And that's the problem with these proclamations. You do one for one group and another group's going to be like, well, what about me? How about you just do a proclamation of love and respect for the citizens of Bothell? Oh, you couldn't do that because then the word citizen would be problematic. For the human beings of Bothell. Well, what about the pets? What about, it's like, it never ends. It never ends. So you brought this upon yourself by saying this group of people is more important than the rest. And now you're complaining. And you know what? I don't care. It's stupid. It is absolutely stupid. And the only way that we're going to move on and really truly become a society where everyone is loved and respected and everyone is treated equally is when we stop putting certain groups of people on a special, shiny pedestal. Unbelievable. All right, coming up in national news, disinformation abounds as ICE is sent into American airports, and we knew it would, which is why we all have to be laser focused on where we're getting our information and double checking about whether it's the truth. First, we're coming up quick on our friend Zach Abraham's live webinar happening April 2nd, totally free. Oh my God, April's going to be here before we know it, which is just crazy. So if you're worried about AI, crypto, tech, what's happening in those industries, how it could impact your retirement portfolio, and also if you're worried about what's happening in Iran, which is something that has taken on significant meaning in the last few weeks, our friend Zach Abraham is going to talk about all of it in his free live webinar, April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. It's his Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar. So during it, they're going to talk about AI, crypto tech, the real fundamentals of value investing, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar, April 2nd. 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Sign up right now for free. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. And if you can't make the webinar, sign up for your own personalized Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's Daily Market Recap, both also at KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay, so ICE has gone to some of these American airports that have long, long TSA lines to try to assist TSA. I don't think it's a big deal. But there is this video that was circulating on social media over this violent confrontation between ICE and a woman at SFO.
Leave her alone!
What are you doing?
Leave her alone!
Leave her alone!
What the hell are you doing?
I hope you're so proud of yourselves, you assholes. You're on video now, too. Yeah. Shame on you.
Shame on you.
You un-American pieces of shit.
Crazy. And you see in that still of the woman's face and, oh my gosh, going all over the place. The news covers it exactly as the news would expect. Viral video shows mother arrested by ICE at SFO. California leaders express outcry and criticism. ICE agents arrest woman at San Francisco airport. ICE officers cuff woman at the airport. And so this all comes as there's all this fake fear mongering over ICE being at the airports. Here's the problem. There's multiple problems with it. The whole story is totally falsified. So this happened before they sent ICE into the airports. The video is from before ICE was even sent into the airport. So here's what happened according to Homeland Security. The arrest of this illegal alien occurred on March 22nd before ICE officers were deployed to airports to bolster TSA efforts. Because remember, they just started showing up yesterday morning, the 23rd. This video was taken the 22nd. It says ICE officers arrested Angelina Lopez Jimenez and Wendy Godinez Lopez at the San Francisco International Airport. These illegal aliens had a final order of removal from an immigration judge while being escorted to the International Terminal for Processing. Lopez Jimenez attempted to flee and resisted law enforcement officers. ICE is working as quickly as possible to send the family back to Guatemala. So, illegal alien had a binding order of removal from a judge. ICE officers were escorting her and her family to the international terminal for processing so they could be sent back to Guatemala. She tries to flee and, by the way, leave her family behind with ICE. They always worry about, oh, how can we do this to families? She fled from her own family. And then she resists arrest. So that video, taken before ICE is deployed to the airports, gets pushed out on social media, and the news stations don't even do their jobs to figure out, hey, when was this? What is the... They're putting out these very vague headlines to try to clearly tie it to ICE being at airports to help TSA. You can't trust anyone anymore. You can't trust anyone. And Nicole knows, I've started a little list at the top of our show sheet of untrustworthy accounts and organizations. And there's also, in addition to the news just being genuinely untrustworthy at this point, there's also a lot of this happening on conservative X, where you've got these big accounts that just take other people's content and push it out. And a lot of the times, totally lacks context. It'll be like 4 years old. And it's almost unusable at this point between the media and all these people trying to earn money on clicks with their weird AI content or old videos without context. It is like impossible to navigate.
I just don't believe anything I see anymore unless I can verify it in a million different places. And I'm not saying that if Homeland Security says something, we should take it as gospel. But you at least need to check with them, right? Hey, what is this video showing? What's happening in this video? What's your side of the story? And then people can take both versions and they can figure out what they believe. We'll get to comments coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord, RHA is a really good organization to be part of. They also have events all across the state of Washington if you're interested in housing policy. And you can, so if you go to their website, they can also talk to you about on an individual basis, if you're a landlord, some screening forms and things that you might need to be able to stay in compliance at the local, county, and state level. And so it's just a good resource. Our friend Wes Jones just let me know yesterday. He and his dad just became members of RHA. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. SCOTUS weighing mail-in voting, Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. There's no argument for mail-in voting, same-day counting only, no more counting after Election Day. Get off your butts and go vote. No excuses. Mickey, completely opposed to vote by mail, absentee balloting for active duty military overseas civil servants, but not for lazy people. Too much opportunity for fraud. Let's see. On gas price coverage, still admitting taxes. Andrew Cates says we need to watch out that they don't raise the CCA fees to keep gas prices high, even when it goes back down. We know they will try. Oh, 100%. They don't want gas prices to go back down. They love this. Let's see. Moon Goddess. WA Dems have some of the highest stupidity in the USA. Maybe. On me going to the best meeting, Jules said one of the clean, green energies that's been the most effective they're trying to get rid of, and that is hydroelectric. Right. They want to breach the dams. They want to rob our ability of natural gas. And then they want to put in these things that can literally explode and destroy a community. Does that make sense to you? No, I think that it's because this method can get them more money. Just wild. Doug Troyer, battery farms are very dangerous. It's still an unproven tech. And that's a lot of the arguments that we heard last night is these people saying, look, this is still like at its infancy. Let's not take a risk in putting it in a very populated area. Like, let's just not do that. Media lies about ICE arrest of woman at SFO. Doug Troyer, she knew she was a non-citizen. Time for the reckoning. It's interesting. I wonder if they were bringing her to the international's terminal, like, to send her on a plane? Like, that's weird to me.
I think they were escorting her back to a plane to take her to
back to Guatemala. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were, like, plain clothes. And the way, the vile way that those people talk to them, and they don't know the circumstance at all. They literally, those people in the airport, have no idea mm-hmm. what happened. And they're, you disgusting, horrible. Un-American. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
And I'm a little confused because I think she's traveling with her child or a child, yeah. And she tried to flee.
Yeah, as leaving, I said, she left the child.
Leaving the child. Like, why? That's a bigger deal than people are making it. But, like, yeah. Let's focus on the ICE agent.
Yeah, absolutely crazy.
It's wild. And did you see how nice the airports were today? Some of the ones that they've been, and they were, like, handing out water to passengers. They were really going for the, like, we're good
the
people.
Lines were much better. Mm-hmm. And not even the media can hide that because like the lines mm-hmm. were much better. Let's see. Haynes says, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly the problem.
Baron of Gray Matter. Next up, like flood insurance, you'll have to have battery insurance and disclose it when you sell your home. That was another issue brought up.
Yes.
They're like, how is this going to affect our insurance? How is it going to affect our property values? Because it will. You got that behemoth of a thing next to your home? Of course that's going to impact your property values.
Right. And we talk about this a little bit in the Sunday show, but the batteries are the reason you can't get on an airplane with a lithium battery in your luggage up there is because it could explode and put a hole in the airplane. But those are this big.
Your phone could take an airplane out of the sky and they want to put like 10,000 of basically those next to your house.
And at the Covington one, it's closer to a school, and they're like, well, we'll just put up a wall so that shrapnel will be stopped.
If you have to put up a wall for shrapnel?
Well, and somebody had to complain to get you put up the wall?
Absolutely insane. If you have to put up a wall for shrapnel, that's not clean, green energy.
No.
It's not. And it probably shouldn't go by a school. Wild. That's nuts. The whole thing is crazy. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check. We're sure this is a new clip.
You know.
Okay. We're going to go with it.
Let's go with it.
Okay. Our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com is the guy you want to talk to if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe moving out of state, or just moving somewhere without a battery energy storage system right next to your house. Our friend Preston, an undivided viewer and listener, says he loved working with Wes and his team because they made him feel like he was their only client.
He works out of East King County, so he deals with multi-million dollar homes. My house is not anywhere near what he sells, but he made it feel like I was one of his biggest clients. I had some really stupid questions, I felt like, and ChatGPT couldn't answer them. So I felt like I was a moron reaching out to Evie sometimes, and she had a lot of grace with her answers. So just him, the way he puts you at ease, the way he treats you like the most important client, and just his whole staff, how helpful they are.
Yeah, and the results were good because they helped him sell his house for over asking. So, I mean, it's great if you have a real estate agent who's nice and helpful and responsive, but you also need to make sure you get the results. And Wes and his team bring both to bear. So go from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes. Go to his website, sellwithwes.com. You can do a bunch of things there. You can see some of their recently sold listings. And I think that gives you a good idea of how they're able to perform for their clients. You can also find out how much your home might be worth by using their home value calculator. Ask Wes for a free market analysis, a number of things. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. A special thank you to Undivided subscribers who support the show for $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. See you back here tomorrow.